Okay, as you mentioned, my name is Kara Hastings. I'm a grad student at the University of Arkansas at Monticello, and I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about how GIS could be applied to our Arkansas Phosphorus Index. So, in 2003, as a result of concerns about decreased water quality, three laws were enacted. And these laws apply to those who are poultry producers and those who utilize poultry litter for pasture enhancement. And the main outcome of these three laws was the requirement for all of these producers to comply or implement nutrient management plans. The phosphorus index is used, or Arkansas Phosphorus Index is used within the nutrient management plan to address phosphorus loss and litter application rates. And it's a risk assessment tool that's used to identify areas that are vulnerable to phosphorus loss. It has three components: a source component, a transport component, and a BMP multiplier for existing conservation practices. The outcome of the phosphorus index are risk values that are grouped into three risk groups. And if a pasture was to receive a risk value that would be high or very high, it would trigger management change. There are a lot of consistency, or there are some inconsistencies within P-index measurement and calculation. Most of these inconsistencies lie within the transport component. The transport component has five variables: soil erosion, runoff class, flooding frequency, application method, and application timing. The first three variables use the dominant soil of a pasture, so any attribute from that dominant soil are used for these variables. Nothing else is included. And these three variables are actually also ones that can be GIS can be applied to. So soil erosion, we calculate soil erosion for our pastures using the Russell 2. Runoff class is from the runoff curve number, pasture management, and slope values from the dominant soil. And flooding frequency, it's a description of frequency of inundation, and we also use it as a proximity to the stream measurement or what any other water body. So P-index accuracy may be decreased by the use of a dominant soil in the pasture. And so what we really want to know is if the use of attributes of all the soils in the pasture could help improve the accuracy of the index. Additionally, there may be inconsistencies in the way that the slope measurements are used. As I mentioned, the first three variables of the transport component do require slope measurement. And the three acceptable methods under P-index methodology are to use the median value from the range of slopes that are associated with the soil, or to calculate rise over run using topographical maps, or, which is most common, to field estimate using professional judgment. So you can see there could be a lot of variability associated with that. So my overall objective is to determine if GIS can be used to decrease variability and increase accuracy within the phosphorus index. And in order to figure this out, I'm asking two questions. Will considering multiple soil types in a field as opposed just to the dominant soil type improve the index or change the index? And will a slope value calculated using GIS from a DEM reduce the variability and increase the accuracy of the index? So first, I had to go out to the field in order to do this, and I measured slopes using a digital clinometer, and those measurements were considered the truth. And then I compared that to soil series median slope value and a 30-meter DEM. So these are the only three slope methods that I will be presenting. And then secondly, as I mentioned before, we're going to calculate the phosphorus index using just the dominant soil of the pasture, and then we're going to calculate the phosphorus index for each individual soil mapping unit. We're going to weight that by the percent of the area of the field that they occupy, sum them to come up with a weighted index. So this study is taking place in the Illinois River watershed of northeast Oklahoma and northwest Arkansas in Washington and Benton counties. These two counties are fourth and fifth in the nation in terms of broiler poultry production. And it also happens that 45% of the watershed in Arkansas is in pasture. So there's a lot of opportunity for litter application. So far, I've visited 9 farms and I've surveyed 37 pastures, the boundaries of which are delineated in yellow. And these 37 pastures have been located in 4 sub-watersheds of the Illinois River. So far, we've looked at 28 different soil types. 88 individual soil mapping units have been surveyed for both slope and STP. Of these soil mapping units, 8 have been determined or categorized to be frequently flooded, 10 are rarely flooded, and the rest have no flooding frequency associated with them. Also, we compared 3 different digital elevation models that were generated in ArcGIS 10, and none of them were really significantly different except for the 5-meter DEM. It was significantly different from both field measurements and from the other DEMs. But as I mentioned before, we're going to focus on the 30-meter DEM, not only because it's not statistically different, but it's also available nationally, and it did have a mean that was least different from my observed slope measurements. But there is one thing I do want you to notice that we observed with all of our DEMs. Here around the 1% observed slope, there was a lot of variability within the relative variability within the DEM. And this has to do with the way that ArcGIS calculates slope. I'll just give you an example. For a 30-meter DEM, if you had a 1-meter change between each cell, you would have a slope value of 3%. If you had a 2% or 2-meter change between each cell, then you would have a 6% slope. There's no way that the computer programs can come up with a slope in between those two values. And so that's where you get some of that variability, which is increased in the 30-meter scale, as I'm sure you can imagine. Next, I compared my soil map unit median value to my field measured slope. And although they weren't significantly different, you can see that the map unit slope does tend to be quite a bit higher. So after we evaluate our slopes, we determine that, you know, they're not really statistically different and we can use them, you know, fairly interchangeably. We're able to move on and calculate our index for the dominant soil and then for every soil within the field. And these are the outcomes. So on this axis, I have my multiple soil method, the weighted index, and this is the current method. And using the field measured slope, the two indexes were not statistically different, but you can see that the weighted values tend to be a little bit higher than the current methods. And for all these slides, my trend line is showing no difference or a 1-to-1 ratio, so you can see where overestimation and underestimation occurred. But, you know, we wanted to know, what does this actually mean for the producers? What does this mean for management? And so now you can see the same graph, but I have included the risk values. And, you know, for using the field measured slopes, only 13 pastures changed at least 50% in terms of their risk rating numerical value, and only 8 changed in terms of risk loss risk. Similar results were seen using the median slope from the soil series data, as well as from the 30-meter DEM slope. Now, in order to understand, you know, a little bit more about what this graph means, or let me show you one of these pastures. First, I'm going to focus on the one in the lower right corner. This pasture had a dominant soil that occupied 32% of the field. It was considered frequently flooded, and it is the dominant soil type based on area. Now, calculating the index for this field gives you, or for using the soil for the field, you get an index value of 128, which is very high. You couldn't apply poultry litter probably for 5 years, because that's how long the nutrient management plans last. But using the multiple soil method and considering all the soil types in the pasture, the others of which are not frequently flooded, you get a risk of 65, which, you know, you can continue on applying litter. So it's pretty, you know, it's medium. Now, we want to look at a pasture on the other side of the spectrum where the weighted value was higher. I have this pasture. Now, just calculating the p-index using the dominant soil, which occupies 65% of the pasture, we got a p-index risk of medium. But if you consider the other 35% of the pasture, which is considered frequently flooded, you get a high risk rating and a numerical value of 94, which the break is at 100, so you know, getting up there. So in conclusion, the use of a DEM for slope estimation, you know, can be used for slope values, but you really have to be careful with lower gradient slopes. And using the multiple soil method affected 13 to 16 of the 37 fields, at least 15%, depending on which slope measurement method was used. 8 to 11 of the fields received a different p-index loss value using the multiple soil method. And really, all of the differences between the weighted index and the non-weighted index that were significant were seen in pastures that had frequently flooded soils. Do you have any questions? Yes.
Is pasture size taken into account in the model, and if it's not?
Yes. Yeah. Here, let me show you. We use the p-index calculator, so it's an Excel spreadsheet. You put in your soil type and your amount of acreage. Immediately, you get your recommended slope value pops up, and then you adjust that if you want to for your field estimation. Your flooding frequency is put in, and your Russell is calculated. And the Russell is calibrated by county, so. You know, that's something that we're wondering as well, because the majority of my pastures are less than 20 acres, which is kind of, you know, pretty typical, but we're still collecting data, and I plan on visiting at least 15 to 20 more pastures this fall. And so that is a question that we have as well, and that we're still trying to flesh out.
So on average, this is going to make the p-index more stringent and reduce poultry manure applications.
I think that, yes, for a pasture that has a frequently flooded soil. But, you know, if like the one that I showed that had a dominant soil that was frequently flooded, I don't know if I would necessarily use that weighted index, because there's a stream flowing through there. Both sides of the pasture are flowing towards that dominant soil. So maybe that's not the best, you know, application. But when you're on a stream side pasture where you have no other way to account for being that close to the water, if you have a dominant soil that's not frequently flooded, then I think there it could make it a little bit more restrictive and maybe a little more accurate.
So if I understand you right, I have the ability to get a more detailed description of my pasture.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to relate into a more detailed nutrient management? Or am I going to, I mean, currently I have one p-index for the whole pasture.
Right.
I have one recommendation ultimately for that whole pasture.
Sure. I mean, I guess you could potentially use this for kind of precision spreading or something like that. Is that what you're asking? Or, yeah, I mean, yeah, and I think that the one way that we're kind of looking at strengthening this a little bit more is actually simulating water level rise and seeing how that compares to the frequently flooded area. Maybe that would even give you a better idea of, you know, what your land looks like. Yeah. Sure.
Based on your, I guess, your visits and observations in these different sites, which one do you think really more accurately assesses the risk of these locations? Because if you have a frequently flooded soil and high risk and expect high losses, you know, maybe it's appropriate to rate that whole field, like you had said, as high. So I guess which one, and or do you have any way of knowing which of those two indices is really more correlated to the risk in the field as opposed to just which one's higher or lower?
Sure. Well, I think at this point we can't really say that this is stronger or more accurate but there are a lot of different studies going on in the watershed, and that I think that when thing that this would really lend itself to is after you had calculated these, you know, the SWOT has been done for this past year. There's a lot of other, there's a lot of people collecting water quality data. And I think that that's one way that you could see, you know, does this really reflect reality? Is this actually doing a better job? But that's not something that, that's not data that I have access to right now, and it's not a comparison that we've made yet.
Okay, thank you very much.